This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Barbara Bogave. Looking back at the year so far, we have seen some big jumps in healthcare and in professional and business services, which means more Americans are moving into offices around the country. Whether that means a cubicle or a corner suite, you can't get around it. The office is a huge part of American life. Most workers spend at least half of their waking hours in the office every day. So let's spend some time talking about the workplace. Now, these days, I'm a freelancer, so I need a guide when it comes to offices. I've asked Ramit Sethi to join me. He's a personal finance advisor and author of the bestseller, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. He's going to start us off by helping us get through the door, and I'm talking about the art of the interview. Thanks for joining us today, Ramit.
Thank you.
Now, you have made a huge promise to us today that you can teach anyone how to interview better than 99% of the people in the world.
Well, that is correct, and the bar isn't very high. Most people go into an interview and they do many things wrong, so we can get very far in just today's segment.
Okay, what are those 99% doing wrong?
Okay, they walk in, and the number one mistake we make when we go in for a job interview is believing that an interview is all about answering questions.
And no, it's about creating an impression.
It's about creating a narrative and communicating your key messages.
Communicating your story.
Mm-hmm. You want to know your three key talking points. And whatever they ask you, of course you want to answer that in your interview, but you also want to communicate your key messages. So for example, you might want to communicate one talking point that says, I'm the creative designer who also has a background in analytics. And so when they ask you a question about, tell me about your background, you're going to make sure to communicate that key point.
Well, where do most people go wrong?
So 80% of the work is done before you ever walk into that interviewing room. Huh. So the research that we do is what makes us the best at interviewing. For example, if you've done your homework, you know what the key challenges of that company are. You also know what that role entails and who they work with. So you start using the words that the company uses. And all of a sudden, that interviewer, his or her eyes are going to light up.
And now you start having a conversation as opposed to an interview.
Exactly.
Okay, so you nailed the interview. You got an offer. But they want you to name a salary figure first. This seems to happen all the time. What do you do?
Don't do it. It's not your job to name the salary. Let them name it first. And I'm going to give you the exact phrase you can use.
Okay, I have my pen. Go ahead.
So you can say, you know what? I'm sure that we can find a number that works for both of us. I'm very interested in the position, and I would love to know how I can contribute to the organization. Let them make the first move. People chronically short themselves. Mm. I've had people who I've hired, I was willing to pay them $10,000 more, and they came at me with a lower number. I said, sure, welcome on board.
Well, I think people feel insecure because the employer usually knows what you were getting paid at your last job.
Well, you shouldn't reveal that either. If they ask you in the middle of an interview, what were you paid or how much do you want to be paid? You say, you know what? I'm sure we can figure out the money later, but right now I just want to figure out if this is a good fit for you and if this is a good fit for me.
What about benefits? These days in such a tight hiring market, are those negotiable as well?
Of course. A lot more things are negotiable than you think. I've had people who work for me negotiate all kinds of benefits, work from home, meet for a quarterly lunch, etc. And of course, because I wanted them, I was way more willing to negotiate with them.
These are all so easy to say. It's so hard to go in there with the confidence that you need to come out with this kind of language.
And that's why 80% of the work in a negotiation is done before you ever walk in the room as well. So you want to be practicing your negotiating skills before you ever sit down with that interviewer.
Okay, so you land the job and you get settled. I imagine you should start networking pretty soon after that, right? Because nothing is sure anymore.
What I like to do, and I recommend this to my students, as soon as they enter a new job, pick a list of people that work at that company and have at least two lunches a week with other people in your company. No agenda, no items. Just say, you know what? I just started working here. I've heard great things about you. I'd love to know what you do and how you got to this position.
And how do you help the introverts among us to accomplish this?
You know, it can be really uncomfortable. You're going to meet someone much more experienced than you. You don't know what to say. It's okay to actually say, do you mind if I pull out a few questions? I prepared them ahead of time. I know I'm a little nervous. People love that. And it's okay to bring your own questions to the table. It just shows that you're prepared.
Ramit is the author of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, and one of the ways that he delivers on that promise is by advising people how to get a raise. Now, there are right and wrong ways to go about the actual negotiation process, but Ramit will tell you that everything depends on the initial approach you take. And thanks for sticking around, Ramit.
Great to be here.
All right, this is stressful stuff. I already feel myself tensing up. And it's stressful, especially during the economic downturn when most employers are sticking to this, 2.5% cost of living increase. So first off, how do you decide when it is an appropriate time to ask for a raise? Economy be damned.
You always want to know what your value is. And you can do that in a variety of ways. You can go online. There are great websites like payscale.com, salary.com. You can type in your information there, and you'll find out what people like you are earning.
It's always a very widespread, though.
Yes, of course. And so you want to do it on multiple sites, and you start getting ranges. I find that with my students, when they do this research, on average, you're not going to believe this, they find out they're underpaid by over $12,000.
Wow.
It's a staggering number.
Yeah, I am surprised.
Yeah. So all of a sudden they say, wait a minute, someone else who gets hired and negotiates their salary is getting paid $12,000 more than I am? That's outrageous.
Okay. All right. So you do your research. Let's say you decide you're worth at least $5,000 more. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want $5,000. I walk in the room. I say, hi, Patty Hirsch, senior producer of Marketplace Money. I'm here to talk about a raise. What next?
Okay, that's actually what most people believe asking for a raise is about. That's why we get so anxious. We think we're going to walk in the room, demand a raise, and of course, what's the first thing your boss is going to say? They're going to say, no.
What, are you nuts?
I haven't even had coffee yet.
Yeah,
exactly. So I actually like to take a much longer approach and show how I can add value to the organization before I ever ask for a raise.
Okay, what do you mean by the long approach?
So I like to start thinking, if possible, 3 to 6 months ahead of time. So I'll go into a meeting with my boss, and I'm not going to talk about money. Instead, I'm going to talk about how I can make their lives easier. So I'm going to say something like this. I'm going to say, you know what? I want to become a top performer at this company. I really want to outperform everybody and make your life easier and help the company grow. These are the things I think would be most important. Do you agree? And they're going to say, yes, no, you should change this. And you say, okay, great. And then a key phrase you can use is you say, you know what? I want to ask you one other thing. If I do these things, if I do an extraordinary job, I'd like to discuss a salary adjustment later on. But for right now, I just want to focus on getting these things done.
So it's important to tip your hand that way?
Remember, you're not saying, can you give me more money? You're using a very strategic phrase, adjust my salary. And so, of course, a boss is going to say, okay, we can have that discussion down the road because you're committing to something now, but you're not asking them for money right now.
Although it's also quite possible they'll just say, look, if you're looking for a raise, you know, no one's getting a raise this year.
Absolutely possible. But once you do these things, if you, let's say you cut costs by 4% or you raise revenues by 3% by doing some optimization on the website or whatever it may be, it becomes very difficult to say no when you have a top performer in your organization.
So you're putting a whole new spin on proactive.
You have to deliver before you go in and ask. Otherwise, why would they give you more money?
Great. Should you go in when you finally do go in and ask? And should you go in with documentation of
Yes.
everything you've done and what an incredible employee you are?
Absolutely. So before I walk in, I want to send them status updates every couple weeks or every month saying, this is what we talked about. Things are going really well. We were able to find some areas to cut costs in, etc. By the time you walk in, there should be no surprise about what the discussion is going to be. You say, 3 months ago, we discussed these things. I just wanted to show you an update. We were able to do X, Y, and Z. And so we also discussed a possible salary adjustment. I'd like to talk about that now with you.
Okay, because I always like to think in terms of worst possible case scenarios, how can you mess it up at this point, given that you've done all of these prior steps?
I like the way you think. So you can mess it up by not sending status updates. Nobody, no boss wants to get blindsided with having their employee walk in and ask for money. Not a good situation.
So uncomfortable.
Very bad. The second thing you can do is be very unconfident. Imagine I walk in and say something like this. So maybe I was hoping that you could possibly somehow give me some more money. What are they naturally going to say? No, we don't have the budget. But if you walk in and you're confident, here's what I've done. Here's what other top performers like me are being paid. It's very hard to resist that.
Should you be ready to walk?
You always want to know how much you're worth. And if that means evaluating other offers and opportunities, of course. But I don't like to walk in and put a gun to the boss's head. Nobody likes that, especially if you're going to be working with them for a long time. So in the back of your head, of course, do your research. But I really don't like to walk in and put people on the spot.
Is there a final phrasing that you would recommend for people when they get turned down? It's just the answer is no. We just can't hack it this time.
You always want to prepare for plan B. Sometimes the organization just really doesn't have the money, or perhaps your boss is just not willing to do it. So what I like to say in those cases is, look, I understand times are tough. I understand we may not have the budget right now. I'm going to continue being a top performer, but what I'd like to ask is that we do a re-review 6 months from now. Get them to commit to at least that. And if they're not willing to even do that, you may want to start looking at other opportunities.
So leave a door open.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. And while we're talking about work, why don't we answer one of our listener letters this week? Michelle is on the line from New Orleans. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how you doing?
Hey, what's your question for Ramit?
Sure. So about 7 months ago, I and my boyfriend moved down here for my job. I recently started a new career with the plan that he would continue school and work part-time. But we found that he had a really hard time finding a part-time gig. And we moved from Silicon Valley, where everything is very internet-centered, to New Orleans, where things are a little bit different. And so I was worried that that's part of the reason he was having trouble, was that he was sort of looking for customer service, retail, food service type jobs, but was really relying heavily on the internet. And I wanted to know if, you know, in most of the country, does it really make sense to search for those kinds of jobs in that manner? Or should you be out there on the pavement like, you know, like I did when I was a teenager or whatever?
Can I back up for a second? What does your partner want to do long term with his career?
So long term, he's in school to become a teacher, but in order to get there, he needs to earn money in the meantime. And so that's why he was looking for, you know, something more short term and part term or part time.
Huh. What do you think of that, Ramit?
Well, if the short term need is just to make some money, then I think that that's fine. I think you always want to consider, is this job going to have a long term potential for me? Sounds like he's on his path towards being a teacher. That's fine. Typically, you know, when you see people going into retail, either they end up staying there a long time or, and this is what I prefer, they have a short-term plan why they're doing it. They need some short-term income, and then they want to move themselves out of a job and into a career.
Right.
Your question, though, was does it make sense, should he be pounding the pavement or thinking online? And I'm just picturing New Orleans right now, spring, right?
Right.
A beautiful time to be out and
lovely.
About. Ramit, what do you think about that?
So I have a very strong opinion on this. And most people who are starting their job search, they take the easy route. They go online to these job search sites, they submit their resume, and they wipe their hands clean saying, well, I submitted my resume, and they wait as if the jobs are going to fall from heaven. That doesn't work anymore.
Well, most people never hear anything at all. That's why, Michelle, I was really surprised to hear you say that most of your professional life you have done everything online.
Well, I mean, in my case, I just started work as an assistant professor. And so, you know, it's the sort of thing where it's a national search. And so you kind of start that process online. Like, you know,
and it's very hierarchical and very prescribed, right?
Exactly. In which case, it kind of makes sense. And so that's why I was concerned. I was like, you know, I think the online search made sense for me, but I feel like for what you're searching for, but, you know, you you don't always want to actually say that. And so that's why I wrote in, was just to see whether or not my instincts were right on that.
Yeah. So, Michelle, I'm gonna share something from the other side of the table. I recently hired someone for a position that I had open. I mentioned it on my website. I got over 400 applicants in seven days, which tells you, and I'll be totally candid here, I gave each applicant about 15 seconds of time. That's what I could afford.
What did you learn from 15 seconds?
I'll tell you what. I had one question in there that was really the key question, and I went straight to that question, and anyone who had the right answer got put into the second pile. And this isn't just me. I'm not just a mean guy. Almost all hiring managers give you 10 to 15 seconds when they look at your resume.
Wait, what was the key question?
The key question was, it was a customer support head position. And I said, how would you improve retention? So it was a bit of a technical question. And I wanted to see if they had experience, they would use the right keywords and they would understand the concepts. If they simply said, I want to make everybody happy, that wasn't the person for me. So, Michelle, back to your question. Online is, you know, it seems to make sense, but everyone else is doing that. So instead, I would recommend pounding the pavement, as you said. That means going out, meeting people who work at these companies. So find out who works there and just say, you know what, can I take you out for 10 minutes of coffee? I just love to ask you a couple of questions. You say, how'd you get the job? What is this company like? What kind of people are they hiring? By the time you go in to walk in for an application, you can walk in and say, you know what, I spoke to Jeff. He had great things to say about this company, and I'm very prepared. I would love to work here. It puts you head and shoulders above everyone else applying for that job.
Michelle, are we talking bartending and actually restaurant work?
Really? I mean, I think initially he was very much thinking more sort of entry-level administrative, clerical type works. He had done a little bit of that before, but then a point came where it was just like a job. Like anything would be good. And so actually the good news is that since I initially wrote in, he actually did manage to find a job, and it was funny because it ended up kind of being a combination of the two, where we initially found the job online, but we actually had a relationship with the organization, and so we were able to able to craft the application and all that to help ensure that he made it to that next step.
So you knew somebody.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear. I'm so glad to hear it worked out. But I hope Ramit's suggestions will work for you in sometime in the future.
Absolutely. No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you.
And as always, we love to hear from you. You can tweet us at Radio Piggy Bank or post on our Facebook page. And you can go to marketplacemoney.org. Why don't we go out on a high note? Something happy about work. And what could be more positive than getting your dream job? We've been holding Ramit Sethi hostage until he gave up his secrets on how to achieve this. And Ramit, thanks for being our guide to all things work.
Thanks for having me.
So I bet many of our listeners are currently on a job search, given the economy now, and they might be taken aback by this phrase, dream job, especially when it just seems like a miracle if you could get a job. Should job seekers, though, always think in terms of a dream job?
Well, from what we hear in the media, we're lucky to have any job at all. But the fact is that if we spend a little bit of time doing things a little bit differently than most job seekers, it's actually very possible, even in this economy, to get a dream job. I know because many of my students are doing exactly that.
And by different, what do you mean?
Well, what do we normally do when we think of getting a job? The first thing we do is we, quote, update our resume. Then we go online and we send it to thousands of companies.
Oh, that's funny, because the first thing I thought of was, what color is my parachute?
We're going back to basics. We're going to be talking about personal relationships, networking, and actually finding the job you want and outperforming every other applicant.
Well, you do have to think about things, though, before you start that networking. You can't just run off in 25,000 different directions, right?
That's exactly right. In fact, I don't recommend people go to networking events because typically you'll find a bunch of other people just like you who are looking for a job. So you don't want to do that. Instead, what I like to do is find the job title and the company that I want to work at. So really doing the work beforehand and then go surgical. Find people who work at that company through LinkedIn or other online sites. Ask them to go out to coffee or have a quick phone call. Typically, they'll actually do it.
You're talking cold calls here.
Cold calls, cold emails. But the best way to do it, obviously, is a warm introduction. That can even happen by saying, hi, Mike. Pleasure to see you online. We're both alums of UCLA. I'd love to get 10 minutes of your advice. And people will almost always say yes.
Huh. So take advantage of any kind of connection, as tenuous as it might seem.
Could be college alumni. Could be you live in the same city. Could be anything you have in common.
So where do people go wrong at this point? You're midway in your networking phase. How do people flub it here?
Number one, it's very demoralizing if you go out and meet 20 people and then you kind of don't know how to turn those meetings into jobs. So it's very important to know the path of what to do next. What I like to do is ask them some questions and say, you know, if I'm interested in this company, what do you recommend would be the best way to go about it? Now, if you come prepared and you ask the right questions, oftentimes they will actually introduce you. And now you're not doing cold calls and competing against everyone else. You have a warm introduction into that company.
Should you be thinking about internships and working for free or for very little, even late in your career?
usually you don't have to do that if you do this job search process right. And again, that means not submitting your resume through the black hole of doom. That means meeting people personally. Typically, you shouldn't have to work for free in those cases.
How do you know when to cut your losses, though, and settle for less than a dream job?
Well, let's be realistic. Not everyone can get a dream job right now. Okay, that's very fair. But what I like to see is people, even if it's not your dream job, getting a job where you say, look, this is a stepping stone to my dream job. I may not be able to get that dream job today, but after I work at this company for 1 or 2 years, I'm going to have amazing skills and I'll be able to translate that into my second stepping stone, which can be my dream job.
Now, how should you think about personal finance goals in the midst of the dream, the search, you know, salary, retirement age, and all of that?
Of course, have that emergency fund. Of course, be thinking about not only cutting back, which is what so many financial experts talk about, but also earning more. There's a whole subculture now of people who have side jobs. Could be freelance, could be part-time. And that is absolutely critical while you're in the job search.
Well, what if your dream job, though, doesn't match up with your earning potential?
You know what? We have to be realistic sometimes. I have a lot of students who say, I want to be a writer or I want to be an artist, but I want to live in a $1 million house. Something has got to give. So either you say, you know what, I'm going to adjust my expectations, or perhaps you say, my dream job may be to earn more money so that I can live up to those expectations and I'll keep my passion on the side.
So it becomes my dream hobby.
Correct. And there's nothing wrong with that. Remember,
no.
A lot of people go to work, they enjoy what they do, but they keep their passions on the side. That's perfectly fine.
Ramit Sethi's passion and his dream job is his website, iwillteachyoutobe.com. And Ramit, thanks for being such a good sport.
Thank you.